Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life.
Crypto's going to take off any day, Ben. I'll send you the link. Welcome to the Gravity Commons Podcast. You are listening to Ben and Matt. We're just a two-man booth today.
We're Christy-less.
She's she's enjoying her kids.
Yeah. It's some motherly parenting duties to tend to.
Yeah, but no worries. We have words and mouths, and we'll take care of this intro without her.
Yeah, guys, I can feel the anxiety rising. Not because Christy's not here in our listeners, but just it's okay. It'll be okay.
Where's sure. The accountability? Yeah. Ben, you and I are going to see a movie today.
We are going to a movie.
I'm pretty excited about it.
Me too. I like movies in general.
We're going to go see the new film Sinners.
Uh-huh.
And it's apropos. Because you are a sinner.
Mm-hmm.
And so am I.
Yeah. Yep.
What do you know about this movie, Ben?
I just saw a trailer for it, and for some reason it intrigued me. Every once in a while, it's just like an intuition of like, oh, that seems like a movie I'd want to see. Even though sometimes it's kind of a horror movie. It's about vampires. Ryan Coogler directed it. Mm-hmm. It's an original, you know, screen. It's not like based on anything else. It's like an original screenplay. I actually don't know if Ryan Coogler wrote it as well, but he did like Black Panther, and what else did he do? He did another kind of well-known movie. Anyway,
Police Academy 3.
I don't think that was it.
No,
I don't think that was it. Anyway, it looked intriguing to me.
Yeah.
Even though it's, you know, horror is not necessarily a genre that I'm like, oh, I got to see every horror film. There's a lot of them I can't actually stomach. I don't know. Sometimes vampires and zombies feel like I can do that. I can do vampires and zombies.
Did you ever see that movie, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Slayer?
No, I heard about it though. Wait, was that a movie or was it a novel? Maybe it was a novel first.
Well, it may have been a novel, but it was a movie. It came into my consciousness via the cinema. And I thought at the time when I saw that, I thought, okay, this genre, mm-hmm. or if you're living in France, listener, Jean, yeah. has jumped the shark, so to speak.
Yeah.
But apparently, no, it's not. It hasn't.
No, I think, there it is. Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, 2012 horror film. That's cheeky, right? It's like a cheeky, it's based on the novel by the same name. I think there's a whole genre of novels that are like Victorian kind of like time period plus vampires. Vampires are kind of, when I think of a vampire, that's what I think of, right? As a well-dressed Victorian kind of person.
You know, the vampire category where someone is undead
mm-hmm.
/ undead unalive and only comes out in the darkness and feasts on other people's life. And when they mm-hmm. feast on their life, they become sort of, they get inaugurated into this undead unalive cadre of people who just feast on the blood of others. Mm-hmm. Is a fairly good summary of our neoliberal capitalistic order, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's true.
But that's not, you know, it's really kind of a metaphor for the world we live in.
It is.
Where people who operate in the shadows feast on the life of others, and those who get feasted on become champions of that order.
Yeah. I wonder if some of those themes may show up in this film. I don't know if they will, but it does make me wonder if there's some metaphors there. Because it's a black film. It's kind of, and what I mean by that is like, is written from kind of the black experience, and black characters are centered in it. But I don't know. I don't know if it'll have some of those. I mean, slavery is a good metaphor for that, you know, experience of being feasted upon, right? So
yeah. And then you gotta have the feasted on, and then like you become a feaster.
Yes. You know? I mean, that's not always my understanding of vampires is that sometimes vampires just kill and feast. And then other times they only feast a little bit and they turn people. But it's not always. You don't always turn people. Actually, most of the time you kill people.
So it's like an MLM.
Yeah.
Sometimes they end up in your downline.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, it's truly a downline too, because I think some of the mythology, everything I learned about vampire mythology, friends, I learned from What We Do in the Shadows, both the movie and the TV show. So, which is, I find utterly hilarious. Perfect. But anyway, a lot of that, you know, there is a sense in which I think if the vampire who created, made you into a vampire dies, I think you die. Maybe that's not true. I think that might be true though. So there is kind of a downline element to it.
Well, let's pay attention tonight. You know who isn't a vampire?
Great segue. Our guest. Are you going to say guest. Our guest?
Yeah, Kevin Sweeney.
Yep.
He also is not a zombie.
Yep. No form of undead is he. Fully alive, as far as we know.
So that's not all we know about Kevin. Let me tell you some positive things about Kevin. He has authored two books, The Making of a Mystic and The Joy of Letting Go, which we've chatted about on this podcast. He's also a chaplain for hospice care and currently lives in Honolulu with his wife, Christine, and their two kids, True and Michaela. Today we chat with Kevin about his latest work, The Cosmic Christ and the Concrete Jesus, Mystics, the Black Prophetic Tradition, and Why I'm Still a Christian. Let's get into this with Kevin. Kevin, it's so good to have you back on the Gravity Commons podcast. How you doing, man?
Good. I appreciate you both. I just said off recording for the people listening. I think this is the only pod where I have all three of my books. I've been on to talk about them. So I don't take these times for granted. I'm super grateful for that. And for both of you, for all the work behind the scenes to make it happen. So thank you both. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm awesome.
Glad you're here.
Yeah. It's a joy to talk with you. I think last time we chatted, you were telling us a bit about winding down and closing your church. Like you were in the process of that. Can you talk a bit about how that went and maybe what you learned in the process of doing that?
Yeah, I want to say I probably had like just done it, you know, because I think The Joy of Letting Go came out January of 2023. And we closed our church down officially like May of 2022.
Okay.
So it's been almost 3 years. Yeah. I think, you know, the last 5 to 10 years in Christian publishing and certain streams of it, I've seen more and more people talk about, you know, the wisdom of the body, you know, listening to your body and those things. And I'm sure I've said this before on this pod, but a lot of the wisdom of the body, the emotional awareness, the self-awareness, the inner transformation, this inner journey, shadow work, that's where my spiritual journey began at 18. So I feel like I grew up in reverse from a lot of my pastor friends. Like they learned how to work and do pastoral stuff and later on slowly learned that journey. I learned that part first and then later on was like, what do I do in a meeting? You know, and that's why my friends would help me who were better leaders than me. And when we decided to close the church, I almost instinctively and intuitively had this thing within me that's like, I need 18 months to just rest, heal, recover. And even with that, there was no burnout. I never burnt out. I never had any major. It was just like, oh, that last decade, especially as an Enneagram 5, especially as an introvert, where it takes a lot of intentional courage for me to show up, leading and show up into the mess and embrace that role. I knew I needed a lot of time. So I think that constant invitation to have the courage and the stillness to listen to what's happening within you and to read the sacred text of your own life. That's a great skill. That's so important for leaders. Like, read the Bible, yes, as a Christian leader, but like to read the text and to read the unfolding narrative of your own life. Where am I? What's happening? What is this season? What do I do next? What is courage? What does intentionality look like? Because it's different season to season, right? So I think that's always one. And two, I think that even as leaders, there's a simplicity to just be honest. Like when we were closing it down and I had somebody encourage me, like, here's a strategic way to do it. I just said, no, we're just going to tell people where we're at. This is what's happening. We're going to close this down. It was a great journey and the time has come. And I think to be met from people, to have that honesty sustained throughout leading and through the ability to be real, like we have to fight for that, you know, Christy and Matt, as leaders. Like, you have to really, it takes a lot of courage to just be real as leaders. You know, so I think both of those has always, those things have guided me, you know, and there's grief and loss and pain, even though it ended well, that I, in some ways, I feel like you always will carry with you, to be honest, you know, but yeah, I think coming through that is, you can continue to imagine another way forward. The Spirit is just as faithful to you when you're leading a congregation or when you're not leading one. And I think it takes a lot of courage as a Christian and as somebody who knows God to trust that, you know, those great stories of faithfulness, they don't stop because you're no longer in that role. So yeah, those are a couple of things that come to mind.
Yeah, that's, I appreciate you sharing that, Kevin. When I heard you say we had, you know, advice to do it strategically, and then you contrast that with the way you did it, which was, I think you used the word like honestly or transparently. Mm. What I'm reading into strategically, tell me if this is right, is that there was sort of pressure or best practice was to spin it, to give it some kind of gloss or shine. And you chose not to do that. Am I hearing that right? Mm.
I think the heart of it, yes. You know, there's a way to like lessen the blow, control the narrative in a particular way or whatever it was. I don't remember exactly, but it was like, do it in three steps and kind of like share a little bit of truth in each part. And I was like, one, I don't have the energy for that right now. Mm-hmm. Two, like, what's the point? Like, we can risk just saying, hey, we've been wrestling with this through COVID. This was a great journey. I've always sensed I would do this for about 10 years. And this is exactly where we are. My wife and I can tell our story to people. We can laugh. We can cry. And like we've heard in many different ways, but it's a lifelong journey to embody. We can be honest and then just surrender the outcome. That, to me, that is one of the ultimate acts of trust and faith, especially in leadership, is like being faithful and surrendering the outcome to life, to God, to everything that's beyond me. You know, like, from when we started the church, you know, with JR and Dan and all of them, you know, with V3 and being a part of their beta group, my question those first few years always stayed with me, is faithfulness enough? Because if it's not, I'm always going to hustle, perform, prove, grind, overextend myself, and I just won't be able to enjoy myself along the way. And I always wanted to do that to the best of my ability. So the faithfulness of this was the best I got. And now after that, people can do with it what they will. You know, that sounds easy and it takes tremendous trust to do that over and over.
Yeah. Well, it's been a few years and there's been like space, right? There's been learning, processing, all of this. And you now have this new book. And I'm wondering if you can tell us about the phrase cosmic Christ. What are you getting at there?
Yeah. There's a park right across the street from my house. It's like right by the water, and I've taken countless walks there, whether they're contemplative or prepping sermons. And as probably during that season, when we were getting ready to close the church, I just had this thought. I'm like, I want to write a book about Jesus. Mm. Right? Because after this awakening moment, this unusual awakening moment at 18 and getting, you know, a theological education, going in very specific ways with Black and womanist thought and going into radical theology and et cetera, leading for 10 years. I'm like, what do I really think? Right? Not like, What do I want to say? What do I, how do I, what do I really think about all this? And I think a part of that engine was at a time where the term deconstruction was getting more and more closer to the center of publishing life, more people were talking about it. I'm like, why is it that I've read most of the things people who are talking about this have read and who it makes it hard for them to identify as a Christian or be a Christian or know what they think about, like, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, I've read everything that's supposed to make me not a Christian. I've had the unitive experiences. It's like, who cares, you know, about ideas and abstract beliefs. But I'm like, why is it still so natural for me to just say I'm a Christian, right? That's what I think and that's what I am. And so the cosmic Christ, there's a point in the book where I say, you know, there's been these funny moments over the past however many years where I get uncomfortable when people use the name Jesus. And you don't hear that from a lot of pastors, but I have. I just feel this weird little itch when I hear it. And it's not that I have an issue with the name Jesus. You know, I've kind of given my life to follow this path, whatever that means. It's just there would be moments where people, if people said God or Spirit or Creator or even Christ, I'd be like, that makes sense. But when they would say Jesus, I'd be like, I don't think that makes sense there. What you're saying, right? So someone's praying at some kind of gathering and they're like, Jesus, I just want to thank you for today. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, huh, okay. So Jesus gave you this day. Like, of Nazareth? Like, the historical person Jesus, who lived in ancient Near East first century, is also responsible somehow for today happening. Right? Like, you know, in Genesis 1, which, you know, I, from my belief, is some form of a poem to make sort of a cosmic sense of what was happening at the time. I'm like, do you imagine it was a 30-year-old Jesus who said, let there be light? You know, you're just up there sitting there already formed, you know, before he was born. If someone thanked God, that's a no-brainer, or Spirit, or but I'm like, does Jesus, like, that's an interesting concept to me. Like, or someone say, you know, I just want to go away today. And just, I just really got to be with Jesus. You know, I just really want to get away with Jesus on like a day retreat. And I'd say, huh, just a little getaway with Jesus of Nazareth. You know, what exactly do you mean by that? Like, are you spending time with this translucent Jesus we see helping Ronald Reagan sign the Constitution in those hilarious memes? Like, is that the Jesus you're just going to go grab some coffee with? And I'm like, someone being intentionally present to God, of course, you know, consciously experiencing your true self in Christ. Yes, awareness of that which is, yes. You know, I joke around with J.R. Woodward. Like, my friend would say, Kevin baptizes people in the name of that which is instead of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit or something like that. I'd be like, well, that works for me. But then when they would say Jesus, I'm like, I don't know if that fits there. And I say, well, the biblical writers speak of that which is embedded within everything. Right, filling the entire universe, existing before all things, holding all things together, like in Colossians 1 and all of these great, you know, places and scriptures. And then I think, well, beginning in the very beginning, with the Big Bang, through atoms and molecules and cells and simple organisms to human beings, to creating culture, to the formation of communities, there's been this hidden evolutionary force at work driving this sacred process. Right, I don't think we can call that Jesus. Right, God is appropriate for me, but the cosmic Christ, or the Christ as that which animates all things, holds all things together, is embedded with all things, was fully present in Jesus, yes, but is the same as Jesus? That just didn't work for me and how I related to the world when I saw in scripture. So there's simple things, you know, the cosmic Christ has been unfolding in and through, and I would argue as the universe since the very beginning, right? It's the creative drive of evolution itself. It's the organizing principle within all forms of complexity. It's the transcendent power imminent within the unity of life itself. So whatever that cosmic glue animating energy is for all of this is where I would begin by talking about the Christ, right? And the cosmic Christ, which we hear mystics talk about.
We'll be right back.
The Gravity Podcast is sponsored by the Gravity Formation Course, our 12-month cohort-based training in practical spiritual formation, where you'll learn how to notice how God is already at work in your life so you can participate more fully in the life that God shares with us. It is a discipleship process that goes beyond just gaining more knowledge and trying out some new practices. In the Gravity Formation course, we go below the surface of our lives so that we can notice and name our deepest desires in God's presence and to discern how God is at work in those desires to lead us toward holistic flourishing, more transformation, more life, more joy, more love. We've trained hundreds of people from all over the world in this formation framework, and it's helped many people to have a sense of God at work in their lives and learn to be more at home in God's love. If you'd like to learn more, go to gravitycommons.com/formation.
Let's get back to the show.
Okay, so you're probably going to hate this because I'm going to simplify this for our listeners. But what I hear you saying is that I don't want to just refer to Jesus because it seems like I'm boxing him in. It's like this tiny little aspect of who the cosmic Christ really is. Let's expand our imagination. Let's really go outside of the box to see for our 3.5-pound brain to really kind of grasp a little bit more about who God is.
I think T.S. Eliot, you know, talks about hints and guesses in life. And I think when we language about the Christ for me is very poetic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think we get closer and closer to it. Sure. I think that's true for God in general.
Yeah.
And so I don't think everything you can say about Christ, you could just say Jesus. You know, I think Jesus was the particular instantiation of the eternal global historical Christ in one particular place, you know, but I don't think it would, to me, it's like not even boxing Jesus in. To me, it just, the inner logic of it doesn't make sense to say Jesus. Like, I experienced Jesus in that beautiful sunset. I'm like, again, what, how does that work? God, presence, grace, love, the unity of all things, all these amazing things. I just don't think it's appropriate to say that, you know, that presence, that eternal, ever-present awareness, that eternal, ever-present divine, like fully present in Jesus. Yes. But to say Jesus all the time to me just doesn't, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. What I hear too is sort of there's a historical, particularity of Jesus of Nazareth that, you know, he was, He existed in a time and a place and had a personality, et cetera. And somehow that Jesus is risen and reigning, right? But the cosmic Christ is more of an understanding of how, like you were saying, there was something present in Jesus uniquely that has always existed, right? This is the incarnation. Exactly. This is the incarnation. Mm-hmm. And so delineating between those things without completely separating them is tricky, right?
Yeah.
Right? It's tricky, but I think the work is important.
And I think for, you know, the mystics, when I talk about the Black prophetic tradition, the concrete Jesus and the mystics and the cosmic Christ, what the mystics want to say about the incarnation is, yes, spirit, matter in Jesus, yes. Divine, human, yes. This, yes. Everything all in one place. But then they also want to say, and also out here too. That which was true about Jesus in one place is also true about the rest of our life right here. This is an incarnational moment at all times. The fullness of spirit and matter in Jesus, yes. And also right here in our lives right now. Also in this world as well. So that's why the mystics get away with it. They're not saying no, they're saying yes. That which was true in Jesus was also true, is also true at all times with all spirit and matter, with all of the earth and God. You know, this is an incarnational moment with the same substance here and now that was fully present in Jesus, right? That's where the mystics want to extend things. Like, absolutely, and it's everywhere at all times right now too.
Yeah.
That's the historical and the universal part, Matt. You know, you're talking about the embodied. Yeah. And for me, even in my own Christian imagination and my pastoral imagination over the years, John 1:18 has always been one of the most central things for me to make sense of my life as a Christian and even what we're talking about. you know, John 1:18, like no one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in closest relationship with the Father. And it says something like, who has made him known, right? The Son, the Father, who has made him known. And that word made him known is like exegesado. It's like, you know, connected with exegesis, right? So I'm like, oh, what does Jesus do? He has shown, he makes the Father known. He has shown us what God is like, one translation says. He has revealed God to us. He has explained him. These are different translations. So I'm like, what does it mean to exegete the Father that Jesus does? Or I would say, what does Jesus do for the Christ? He brings forth, he explains, he narrates, or even unfolds, right? So I'm like, oh, the embodiment of Jesus is the explanation of God. Jesus reveals who God is and what God is like, right? That we all would agree with, you know, that part. So I say, well, if Cornel West says justice is what love looks like in public, John is saying Jesus is what God looks like in public, right? So that which is true universally and eternally is made known fully in this one particular place right here in Jesus. So even to break down some of those things of how I make sense of this, I'm like, well, if Christ is the presence, right, this ever-present reality, then Jesus is the path. Like the cosmic energy of the Christ is concretely expressed in and as Jesus. What you're talking about, Matt, with the universal and the particular, the universal truth of everything is embodied in the particular life of Jesus, right? Or some people might say God is what Jesus does. And when you talked about reality, Michael Dowd, the writer, says Jesus is reality with a personality. So yeah. That connection of the eternal present Christ and the particularity of Jesus and the particular streams I draw from for this is really the link of the book for me. So, and it's the link of my entire life and why I can do it, be where I'm at and say, yeah, I'm a Christian. Oh, I've read that. I'm a Christian. Yeah. I have my critiques of the creeds. I find them to be pretty limited. I'm a Christian. You know, I don't care. I am a Christian. This link is what allows me to feel so organic when I do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of those streams because your subtitle, we could just spend the whole podcast talking about your subtitle. You know, it's Mystics, the Black Prophetic Tradition, and Why I'm Still a Christian. Let's double click for a bit on Black Prophetic Tradition. How were you introduced to that tradition? And you are, I think you're retrieving what you refer to as a concrete Jesus. And that's one of the streams you're retrieving a concrete Jesus from. So what do you think the Black prophetic tradition has to offer for, you know, there's four white folks on this call, for, you know, garden variety white folk in our culture today?
Yeah. Yeah, I tell a story in there where in 1976, you know, the very well-known Reverend Jesse Jackson, you know, he shared some provocative thoughts about the differences between MLK and Billy Graham in this interview he did for Christianity Today. So good on Christianity Today for letting, Jesse Jackson come on there. And one of the key statements he made is 1976, right? So I'm talking about 50 years ago, almost. And one of the key statements he made while he was referring to the Israelites being enslaved in Egypt, he said, Billy Graham would have preached to the slaves in Egypt and converted their souls and told them to go back to the fields. Then he'd have gone and played golf with Pharaoh, which is hilarious, by the way. And a lot of people are still golfing with Pharaoh today. And he said, but Dr. King would have preached their souls and then taken them to Canaan. Right? For Graham, salvation was this individualistic and strictly about saving souls. But for King, the gospel included our personal life with God, but it was also about justice and the interconnected link with social and economic liberation as well. So to me, that gets at some of the heart of what I think the Black prophetic tradition has to offer, not just Black folks, but all of us today. Because without including liberation in the gospel, we are always left with a truncated Jesus. A Jesus who cares about saving our souls, but it does not value human bodies. A Jesus who sees people individually, which is wonderful, but does not have a vision for justice collectively. And I could go on and on about that. So in 2010, when I was at Fuller, this is like just post emergent church, everything, or kind of at the end of that conversation, which I loved. That was a huge for me. That was my first major shift of consciousness, stage of faith, evolution, was through all that. But it was like those in emergent talking about postmodernity and, you know, there's no more epistemological certainty and it's everything everyone sees from a perspective. Yes, I agree with all that. That primed me. So when I went into an intro to Black theology class in 2010, it was like I was so primed to just receive that so much. And I had a professor, Dr. Ralph C. Watkins, head of Black theology department there, who was just a spellbinding lecturer. I could listen to him for 3 hours. And he introduced me to the Black prophetic tradition, introduced me to Black and womanist theology. You know, Cone and Kelly Brown Douglas and Katie Cannon and Renita Weems and Dwight Hopkins. And my mind was being blown every day. And I'm like, this is it. Like, this is the best thing I've ever heard. It's exciting. I kind of feel like I was comfortable listening to it because I grew up so immersed in hip hop. I'm like, everybody I've ever loved has been Black. Every artistic voice, every cultural influence, from listening to En Vogue and R&B at like 8 or 9 years old, to Boys to Men, to everybody in hip hop, to every basketball player. I'm like, I've kind of only ever trusted Black folks. So I feel like this is just in line with me. But it gave me a vision for the liberating Jesus. You know, Kelly Brown Douglas in her book, The Black Christ and What's Faith Got to Do With It, those two books, one of the main, and that shaped me pastorally as well for, you know, about 10 years. For her, Jesus's earthly ministry was defined by identification with the marginalized and solidarity with the oppressed. When I saw that and that clicked, I'm like, if you don't integrate those at the heart of Jesus's earthly ministry, which affects how you follow the concrete Jesus, you are missing some of the most important dimensions of the gospel. This is what it looks like to follow the concrete Jesus. Do I identify naturally with the marginalized? Do I orient my life to be in solidarity with the oppressed? So liberation being at the heart of that tradition changed my life forever and how I see Jesus. Yeah.
Well, you have a whole chapter on love and liberation where you tie these two things together, right? And we talk a lot on this podcast and in Gravity World about love. Would you talk just for a minute about love as the fuel of liberation and what difference does that make? Like, why is love essential in Christian liberation?
Yeah, well, I think like Jesus and the great sort of, you know, pioneers of the Christian faith invite us into is a life of love. And, you know, the ground is love. The goal is love. You know, Pierre Desjardins says love truly is the deepest structure of the universe. Like, it's not one thing amongst other things. It is that which is beneath, before, and grounds everything. And I find that to be extremely poetic and beautiful and accurate. And so when the Christ loves us so well that we can feel grounded in our bodies, settled in our spirits, and can have an increasing journey towards peace and joy, that's amazing. That's what I wanted to be free when I was young. That's all I wanted to. I was like, what does it mean to be free? So that's what changed my life. But the concrete Jesus then dares us and invites us to live a life for real, grounded, earthy, economic, social, political liberation. And if I don't have a concrete liberating Jesus as a privileged white male, I could just take love part back. It's cool, man. Like, I love the 60s and 70s in that era of like cultural revolution hippies. Like, I would have loved that. And I can just settle into my life and be totally inoculated and disconnected and indifferent towards justice. But that love as a foundation, which then fuels me, empowers me, and dares me to be a person who works for liberation, that is the connection that fulfills that process. If you have the concrete liberating Jesus without the love of Christ in you, you're probably gonna end up another burnt out, angry, bitter, resentful activist who's doing a lot of objective good, but is losing your soul and yourself along the way. But if I only have I'm receiving love part without the work, now I'm just another like bourgeois, disconnected, you know, not grounded in the struggle for liberation in this world, you know? So the love that I receive with the liberating Jesus allows me to go do that work. But doing that work as I'm filled with love allows me to do it from a place of compassion instead of compulsion, from a place of working for healing instead of trying to conquer and win the things that can drive us to do the work but overtake us along the way. So I think it allows us to be free and freely do the work without losing ourselves. You know, that's the great invitation for me.
And now a word from a sponsor. All right, let's get back into our conversation.
In a lot of ways, your book is talking about an idea that I really resonate with, which is kind of holding together the contemplative and the activistic. And I, you know, it's one of those things where I get it, like the theory of it is great. You know what I mean? And I think you're right. You know, there's a theology there that it's important. But I wonder what have you found are the difficulties of trying to hold those two things together?
I think, and this is based on like Enneagram wisdom and personality stuff, you know, I find it to be fascinating that I think so many of our greatest strengths and traits where we feel like we're highly evolved, I'm like, that's just your personality. You know, we feel like I'm so evolved in this area. It's like, those were just your survival mechanisms as a kid that the volume has been turned up super loud, you know, and it wasn't really any merit on our end of why we got those. And I say that because I think based on our personalities, Ben, like, you're probably going to be more oriented towards action, or someone's going to be more oriented towards like stillness, right? And it doesn't mean contemplation. It just means like inaction and just kind of chilling and relaxing and being okay. Mm-hmm. And so I think that struggle, the ongoing struggle to hold that together will be very different based on the personality. The person who's oriented towards action and justice and work and compassion, their lifelong journey is, it's okay to slow down. You don't have to do this all yourself. You don't have to work until you're sick. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh's like the liberated person, this is paraphrasing, but like the liberated person, the awakened person would never work until it's detrimental to your body ever. Why would you do that? And so that person has to consistently be drawn by the ever-present Christ who holds us and say, dude, it's like, hey, it's okay to slow down. The person like me, who's more introverted, Enneagram 5 oriented towards inaction, is like, hey, dude, like there's work to be done. You have to consistently choose courage to get in the game and get in the incarnational mess of this world. Mm. Like, I feel like my life, my wife's an Enneagram 2, one of the most powerful, seemingly endless amounts of energy reserves. Like, it's unbelievable. You know, she used to work in the entertainment industry. She has like those old school VH1 driven stories of how she got her jobs. Like, she's like that. And my lifelong message to her as a 5 is like, hey babe, it's okay to slow down though. And her lifelong message to me is like, hey babe, there's shit to be done, bro. Like, come on. I don't know if you have to bleep that, feel free, but she's like, and there's work to be done. So can you give me those email things I needed to send us? I'm like, oh, Kevin, yeah, sorry.
I'm loving this Enneagram 5 versus Enneagram 2 energy because Christy may know something about that.
I do. You're speaking our language here for Paul and I.
Nice. Yes. It's a fun blend.
Yeah.
It works when you learn to listen to each other and have humility, you know, it's great partners.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
If not, there can be a lot of friction.
There's so much more to explore in this book. I mean, you mentioned evolution earlier and you get into some like, you know, quantum realities in this book that I think are really fun, Kevin, but maybe as we draw to a close, I wonder, your bio says that you're working as a hospital chaplain these days, or hospice chaplain. Yeah, hospice. And I wonder if you could reflect for a moment what that work is teaching you about this dual cosmic and concrete Christ reality. What are you learning there?
Yeah, there's an irony of the season of life I feel like I'm in and the fact that I'm doing all these podcasts and promoting a book. Because through a big plan I had post Imagine that fell apart, and then hospice emerging out of the disruption and loss, like our lives and vocations tend to do in ways we don't always want. I just had this moment at the end of last year, leading into this year, where I was like, I'm tired of talking about God. That's just, to be totally honest, like, I'm tired of talking about religion. I'm just so tired of this right now. Which says nothing about my desire to, when we're talking about the concrete Jesus, to embody the way of Jesus in the world. It says nothing about that. It says nothing about my commitment to people. I just wanted to transition from word-based stuff, like teaching and writing, to like, if it's not embodied right now for me, like, I'm just not that interested. You know, and words are embodied, you know, but for me, it's like almost like beyond language. Like, I have very little to say right now. I just want to be with people again, and vulnerable people specifically. Like when I talked about how the concrete liberating Jesus has shaped me, you know, to think about those on the edges. And so when I'm doing hospice work, it's very different. You know, some people are 60, 70, they could be 90, nonverbal, barely verbal, cognitive decline. Everyone's unique, you know, just like pastoring. And so you're always adapting, you know, which is why I think we're primed to do a lot of good things in the world. I really believe that. And in hospice, I think when I'm there, my primary way of thinking about hospice is about seeing people. And that's one of the primary ways I think about the divine gaze at the center of the universe, is there's a loving set of eyes. That's like, it's an affirming gaze all the time on us, and a universal affirmation over our life. And as a hospice, what I'm saying is I'm mirroring that for other people, and I'm bearing witness to like the dignity and beauty of their lives. That's all I have to offer right now. Like, no, like in these situations, none of it's about abstract beliefs. None of it's a belief based. Now, it's very just pure connection and seeing. And I'm discovering in this, there's a mutual seeing happening when I'm with my patients. It's me seeing, me allowing God to see them through me and as me when I think about the incarnation, and also me being seen through them by God at the same time. Because this work offers me everything my spirit wants pastorally, without any of the elements my ego wants from public Christianity.
Yeah.
This is why I think this work is so important for me personally. You know, all of my work right now is invisible to the world. And I feel like that is helping save me. That is helping liberate me even further. That is helping ground me even further in the Christ, as my energy is focused in places that aren't seen. And I've realized going into my 40s, instead of like taking off in this way, I'm like, oh, it's the opposite for me right now. It's doing this other work of dissension, like Henry Nouwen would talk about. So the simplicity of seeing people and trusting the Christ who sees them through us and as us in the moment, as the Christ is present, I'm like, this is my life right now in the work. And it's really amazing. I'm very grateful for it. Yeah.
Well, Kevin, thanks for being with us today.
So when the music fades and all... Yeah.
Could you lead us?
By the way, that brought back a lot of memories. I probably led that song as a worship leader like 100 times.
Yes!
Probably 100 times.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. That is something that we know is not from the Black prophetic tradition. Just to...
Yeah, slightly different. Yeah, just, a little bit different.
The book, again, is called The Cosmic Christ and the Concrete Jesus, Mystics, the Black Prophetic Tradition, and Why I'm Still a Christian. Kevin Sweeney, thanks for being with us today.
No, I appreciate you guys. You guys are great. This is awesome.
Okay, two things that kind of caught my heart in that interview. One is he was talking about like that his heart, I don't know how he said it, but something about his heart for pastoring and shepherding like gets to be utilized in the hospice world without the temptation of the ego. And I was like, ooh, I just need more of that. I need more of whatever that is. that like hit, it's a probably a kairos for me to kind of unpack of like, where is my ego at work in my job that I need to kind of dig out and see what's underneath there. And then the other thing that he said, just kind of talking about, people are kind of tired of hearing, he was saying he was tired of talking and he just wanted to like, with his actions, maybe love. Mm-hmm. This is my interpretation of what he said. And I think the world actually wants that. I think the world is longing for Christians to maybe stop talking so much and show them with mm-hmm. their life. You know what yeah. I'm saying? Like, love the person in front of you in a real way instead of talking at them. Anyway, those two things just kind of hit home. Did anything hit home for you guys?
Yeah, I think the first one with the ego, you know, and just the quiet work of doing hospice care. I have another friend who was a pastor for 20 years at a vineyard church. And for the last 5 years has been a hospital chaplain and now is doing hospice chaplaincy. And it is such a different work.
Yeah.
You know, and I often, one of the things I think about when we talk about ego is, what are we talking about when we say ego, first of all? I think we all know, you know, doing things for your ego is bad, or we should think it's bad. But I often don't quite know how to determine that in my own life, you know. Yeah, so I think about the questions and the complications around, for me personally, discerning vocation or work. And, you know, it's not necessarily true that quieter, smaller, less public work is better, right? So it's not true that like hospice chaplaincy is better than being a local church pastor. But then I get kind of spun up and stuck a bit when I think about what would it look like for me to, you know, investigate or reckon with it, whatever ego is at work in my ministry. Mm-hmm. So I start thinking about that stuff.
Yeah. Ben, I know you joined us in the middle. He said both of us, and then all of a sudden there's three. And
all of a sudden there's three, and he said all three of us. Yeah. Anyway. Listener, if you were confused by both of us, and then Matt said there's four of us on the call, it's okay. I joined late, so. Yeah, I was just happy to be along for the ride. I feel like I'm still catching up.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. Well, I told him actually before we hit record, I'm reading this book by a Christian mystic, and it's like these poems, and mm-hmm. I've really enjoyed it. Like, it has been this kind of delightful thing that I've just kind of taken on. And it makes me, makes me think and
yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'll put the title. I haven't read the whole book, so I feel like I don't know if I can like 100% endorse like, yay. It. Yeah.
You
but
can say it makes you think for now. The author? Who's the author?
Norris, Norris.
Is it Kathleen Norris?
I don't think so.
Is it Chuck Norris?
Oh, Chuck Norris, famous Christian mystic.
I've heard of him.
Oh my gosh. No, it's not Chuck Norris. Okay. I'm trying to think, like, it's called A Mystic Garden, Working with Soil, Attending to Soul. And it kind of
goes, the title, but you don't have the author?
I'm looking.
Oh, you're looking.
Okay. I'm trying to look for it. Gunilla, is that how you say it? G-U-N-I-L-L-A. Gunilla Norris. Anyway, I have really enjoyed it. And now I'm like endorsing a book I haven't finished, but it's just been delightful for me.
Well, good.
I haven't heard of that one. That's great.
Yeah.
Love it. Yeah. There was a question I wanted to ask Kevin, but I felt like we were running short on time. So Chrissy, I'll ask you instead. What has two butts and kills people?
I don't know, Matt. What has two butts and kills people?
An assassin.
Matt, we need to edit the end of our podcast always.
I think that's a pretty good little joke, don't you?
Oh my gosh, you're ridiculous.
Yeah, there's like the listener, there's a few of you that aren't that are still wondering why is that funny? And I'm not going to explain the joke to you.
Just press pause and pray. And it will come to you in a vision.
All right, everybody. Well, thanks for listening to us. We don't maybe acknowledge that you could spend your ear time anywhere, and you spend it with us, and so we appreciate that, and we love you all.
We do. Yep. Thanks for spending your ear time with us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We even love Matt when he tells dumb jokes. Yeah,
that's what my ear time is driving. And I do. I have very specific things that I use my ear time for.
Yes. It is a precious commodity. Mm-hmm. All right, everybody. Until next time.
Yeah. Peace.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast, and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect there with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith and spirituality and whatever else comes up. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. Finally, we would love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, you can go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the start recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.